Blitzky and Son. Oh, hey there. Please hold while I transfer you.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a swell new system. You call me and I transfer you. Hold on a tick. Chuck,
yeah.
Do me a solid and take this to Mr. Pete.
Sure thing.
Chuck, don't trip over. The cord.
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX solution for your business that offers fantastic savings. Available from 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
It's Friday afternoon. That means it's time for another episode of Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Craig Wilson. Hi, Craig.
Hello, Duncan.
So a bit of a grim week, really.
Yes, rather. And we're a busy one again, just like the one before, except this one was a little bit sadder. Big news, of course. I mean, and some would tell you the only news. Everything else has really been overshadowed by it. And that, of course, is the death of Steve Jobs.
The untimely death, 56 years old.
Indeed, yeah.
And certainly a pioneer of the industry we write about.
Indeed, very much so. And you think, you know, as a couple of people I spoke to said, imagine what he could have achieved in another 30 years. But then, as I said to them, he still did more in those 56 years than most people do in an entire lifetime. So,
what many people together do in a lifetime.
Yes, exactly. So
it was very sad news to hear of his passing. I've been using Apple products since the early 1980s. My first experience with Apple was on an Apple II. I learned to first write...
which is one of the iconic ones, really.
Yeah, I first learned to program on it. Well, when I say program, I do a bit of coding here and there. We used first Logo.
Right.
All things, and then learned Pascal on... I think it was Pascal back in those days on the old Apple IIe.
Turbo Pascal.
No, it wasn't Turbo Pascal. This was prior to Pascal.
I see. Now I'm giving I'm giving away my age. My first experience was with Turbo Pascal.
Yeah, I learned to program on the PC in Turbo Pascal, which was really powerful at the time.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I think it morphed eventually into something called Delphi.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it did.
We're getting off track here already. Very sad news about Steve Jobs. You know, he really helped pioneer the early computer industry. Though his detractors will say he stole the graphical user interface from Xerox PARC. He really popularized it with the, I think it was the Lisa, or was it, did it first come on the first Mac? It's so long ago now, I'm actually having trouble remembering
and
all the
I'm
detail.
I'm afraid, yes, slightly, a little bit just before my time, yes. So I can't confirm, yeah.
But he certainly pioneered the graphical user interface before Microsoft came along with the first versions of Windows, and... those first versions of Windows were something to behold.
Absolutely, yeah.
He was ousted from the company that he co-founded with Steve Wozniak back in the late 1970s and basically went into the wilderness for 12 or so years.
Computing wilderness, but went on to build two other successful companies in the interim.
Pixar, of course, which he took over, and Nextstep. And of course, Nextstep was later acquired by Apple and became the basis of its operating system and its turnaround.
Absolutely. So he sort of, you know, boy, the work he did outside of it remained part of it. And you can also be sure that Pixar Studios today are laden with Mac computers.
Yes.
And probably were in the early days as well. I think what's really interesting too, if we look at Jobs, is aside from all of these innovations early on, is how many other industries he's affected. You know, I mean, he's essentially, he changed the way that we consume music and media, and, you know, the iTunes store has, you know, changed the way people, you know, watch series, and, you know, we have things like this podcast. I mean, just the notion of a podcast was, you know, essentially an Apple invention. And also interesting, as you said, about the Xerox, you know, saying perhaps that he stole the idea. In a couple of instances, as with the iPod or the iPad, you know, even the iPhone, none of them really were the first instance of the particular device.
Neither was the podcast. I mean, there were audio netcasts, or whatever you want to call them, online. But
exactly, they
really popularized.
They just found the way to do it best. You know, they didn't make the first touch phone. They didn't make the first tablet. They just made the most the ones that captured the mind share early on and captured the imagination of, as we've said, what also proved to be absolutely obsessive fans.
And that's clearly, I think, where Jobs' strength is in the singular focus on design detail. And, you know, Apple, for a company that recently overtook ExxonMobil to become the biggest listed US company, It's a company with remarkably few products.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, they've got a line of maybe a dozen products that they sell.
Sure, if you think of the Nokia website and you look at the pages and pages of phones to cover every possible end of the market,
yeah.
And Apple, for a long time, made one phone.
Yeah.
And they still do.
They still effectively
release, you know, you keep the old ones, but essentially they make one phone. Mm. And if you consider the success of that, it's just phenomenal. And as you said, I mean, it's that marriage of design and quality too. I was talking to someone else the other day who was saying that, you know, yes, Apple products cost a lot, but that's because you can't buy a bad one.
It's a ruthless focus on simplicity as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's no... It's
which Bill Gates would probably tell you is boring, but most of the fans would disagree. I think there are a lot of the products. There really is just an inherent beauty in the simplicity and the elegance, really, of the design. You know,
yeah. And his talent, in another way, was really taking what is a complex technology and really making it simple and attractive and something that people want to use.
Indeed, and still do. Yeah, and so non-threatening. But as you said, not even just removing sort of barriers to entry, but just getting on, allowing people to do amazing things with the products. Mm. There was a great comment the other night about just that, how the idea was, you know, that we want to give people the tools to do amazing things, said old Jobs, as opposed to wanting, you know, needing people to do amazing things to get the tools to work.
Mm.
You know, the tools should get out of the way. And I think that's that sort of, you know, carries through to all of the Apple products. And it's just that sort of commitment to design has proved so important. And when you think about, you know, just even those early iMacs and the popularity of them, in part perhaps because of the novelty of how they looked compared to any other computer on the market, but you know, those early sort of seeds have grown to produce beautiful products today that are also instantly recognizable and, as you said, deeply coveted. There are very few people who would claim that they wouldn't want an Apple device, except for some serious, hardcore high-end users who insist that they prefer the flexibility of a Windows or a Linux machine.
Yes, and all the tributes that have been pouring in from senior politicians, from top executives in the industry, et cetera, it's been quite amazing. I was astonished to see that even Google, Apple's arch rival, had a tribute to Jobs on its homepage today yesterday with. With a link through to the Apple homepage right there on the Google homepage.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's been one of the most incredible things too is, you know, if you look at all the posts from around the world from the different Apple stores and people, you know, leaving flowers and wreaths and notes and so on. I mean, I can't think of another business leader where we've sort of seen this kind of outpouring. And I think it's very accurate to describe Apple's loyal customer base as fans. And you don't normally, you wouldn't usually associate that term with people who follow a particular product, but fandom really is the right description.
Yeah.
So people are almost obsessive. There's almost a religiousness about it.
Yeah. I personally think people get a bit carried away with it. And I think
I've seen some of that with
some of the flowery prose that's been written this week about Steve Jobs, which I think took things a little too far.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
But,
well, I think also we were talking about, you know, the problem is, and it happens whenever anyone dies or any sort of public figure dies, is there's also this sort of instant canonization and people are, you know, all the sort of sins are washed away and suddenly people only seem to focus on the amazing. And, you know, I think from some of the reports I've read, Jobs must have been a difficult character.
Mm.
You know, and people who are that driven and that inflexible in their sort of vision, you know, are not always the easiest people to get on with. And I think a lot of this, you know, the commentary, we sort of forget that there will be those people who got a really hard time from lashing from the end of his tongue or, you know, had a difficult time working under him. And that he wasn't perfect, but that's what makes it all the more impressive as to what he achieved.
Reading all the commentary this week, I was quite interested in one piece, and I don't know if one story I read, I don't know if it was apocryphal or not, but apparently it's quite a well-known story in Silicon Valley. Apparently there was a woman who got into an elevator. She was there for a job interview. She walked into the elevator and Steve Jobs was in the lift, and she said, oops, sorry, wrong elevator, stepped out again, and Steve Jobs stuck out his hand and said, no, please come into the lift, who are you, who do you work for, blah blah blah. And it quickly became apparent that she was there for an employment opportunity. And in the short distance it took to go from where she got into the ground floor, where they got out of the lift, apparently Steve Jobs to her said to her, I'm sorry, we don't. You're not well suited to working in this company. He did the job interview in a matter of seconds.
My so, Lord, yeah. Well, that's it. And there are anecdotes like this that just remind us that he was still human and he was still flawed.
And also, I mean, not to detract anything from the man, because I mean, his achievements are utterly remarkable, but there was also a bit of a cult of personality around him, wasn't there?
Indeed. And I think that's also what people are so attached to. And, you know, we're not used to business leaders quite so charismatic and who are quite so prominent and in the public eye.
I was just about to say, I mean, there have been plenty of CEOs over the last century who've done remarkable things, but they don't put themselves out there in the public eye and really...
There's only really a handful. I mean, Richard Branson
does it, yes. But I mean, if you think about, I mean, I'd probably come up with better examples than this, but if you think about, you know, who was the guy who came up with Coca-Cola and turned it into a global brand? You can't think of his name. Sure. Well, surely he was a great CEO. And I'm sure there are plenty of other examples of guys like that. A friend of mine was just mentioning to me this afternoon that apparently the guy who invented the video cassette recorder and the Walkman died this year as well, and no one mentioned that when it happened or shed a tear for him.
Sure.
Simply because he wasn't out there in the public limelight. But as I say, I don't want to detract from him, from Jobs,
because
he's done an amazing job, but certainly there was this cult of personality around him, which I think may have affected the level of anguish that followed his death.
Sure, absolutely, because he was so much in the public eye, and so many people, you know, felt that they knew a bit about him.
Mm.
I mean, he was really a serious celebrity CEO, which, as you said, is quite a rarity, particularly in a technology company.
Mm.
It's just not that common a practice. But yeah, I mean, just the list of achievements is quite phenomenal. There's so many products that have really, really just changed things entirely. I mean, really, my big one that I keep thinking back to now is the iTunes Store and the iPod. You know, I mean, I think the iPod really was the one that completely changed the landscape, and that, you know, everyone else in a sense is still trying to catch up.
Funnily enough, I'd list the iPod as the only Apple product that I feel is essential to my life. I could quite easily. I mean, I use a MacBook. I use a Windows desktop, but I could quite easily use a Windows laptop as well.
Sure.
But on, you know, the music player side of things, nothing really comes close to it. I mean, Microsoft just killed the Zune off this week or last week.
Indeed, indeed. I find it really funny actually because you say that, because the iPod is one of those strange items that I've just never gotten around to owning.
Okay.
I think in part I always thought about it, if I lived somewhere where I had a commute.
Yes.
That wasn't in a car. I would certainly have found a way to buy one, as a poor student.
That's where I use my iPod. I use it in the car.
Indeed.
To music on the go. Most modern cars have 3.5mm jacks, so it's great. You just plug it in, don't have to listen to the awful radio, the awful radio stations in South Africa.
Indeed. No, my thing was, for so long I worked as a music reviewer that I always had things to listen to.
Yes.
And then by the time I got around to actually thinking, oh, maybe I should buy an iPod, I had so many CDs ripped for the car that I've just never gotten around to it. And otherwise, I don't find really opportunities to listen to it. I mean, I consume a lot of music,
yes,
but it's generally over speakers. So still a revolutionary and just incredible device. I think it was also the one that embodied that Apple principle for a new generation, you know, for the sort of, you know, the people who don't remember the Apple II or who don't remember the iMac for that matter. They still remember the iPod, and it was just, you know, that click wheel is absolutely iconic.
Yes.
And that sort of, and it was that sort of intuitive interface.
It was in fact the iPod that really started to turn around Apple's fortunes, not the introduction of that bubble-shaped iMac back in 97 or 98 or whenever
it came out.
If you look at a chart of Apple share price, you'll see it starts to take off around 2002, 2003. And it was really on the back of the success of the iPod and later the iTunes Store that really started propelling that. And then obviously you had the iPhone and the iPad that came after that.
Indeed.
But hugely successful businessman. And
what has been funny to hear this week, though, just coming back to this sort of cult of personality, is some of the questions I've seen where people have said, you know, essentially they've suggested, do you think this is the end for Apple? Which, of course, is absolutely ludicrous.
Oh, of course, yeah.
That people can attribute. But, I mean, just the fact that, that there are people who considered that a serious question to ask, it's absolutely astounding. But I think it just speaks again to this this enormous personality and how integral people think he was. Yeah.
Yeah. The real question to ask is whether Apple can continue with this single-minded focus on delivering simple, beautiful products that customers love.
Indeed, and
that's the big question.
And that customers are willing to pay more for than for other products. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So, speaking of new Apple products, it's almost been drowned out in all this news this week. Apple had its big keynote with the new CEO, Tim Cook, and took the wraps off the iPhone 4S. Immediately led to a great deal of anguish again, to use that word, from their fan base, because they failed to announce an iPhone 5. Craig, I know you... you had some views on this.
I did, yes. I had some people calling me an Apple apologist. one tech journo in particular who will remain nameless. But you know what I was doing? I was terribly disappointed by the keynote, in part because I sat watching it, because that's what you do when you work in this business.
Yes.
And it was incredibly dull. Yeah. As these things go, you know, everyone expects fireworks. And because they're only occasional events and because of all the hype and all of the rumors surrounding what they were going to announce, when none of these rumors materialized, there certainly was a palpable sense of disappointment, both from those in attendance and from a lot of people I spoke to who watched it. But I was thinking about it after the fact, and I just, the more I thought about the device and the more I thought about Apple's sort of product cycles and the way that they've introduced the iPhones over the years and the incremental upgrade from the 3 to the 3, the 3GS, or, I mean, sorry, from the 3G to the 3GS. And it just seems to me that this was, if anything, actually the right move for them. You know, I feel like the iPhone 5 has to have something big, whether that big is, 4G or LTE or what they're calling, the next connection, or a bigger screen also with a sort of retina display quality, or there's something. There has to be something really, really that stands out. But at the same time, Apple needs another product to fill the gap. You know, the iPhone 4, granted, it's only been here for a year or so, but it's been out in the States for sort of 15 months, I think.
That's right.
And as far as sort of product cycles go, especially when you do only release one handset, they need to get something out there for those people whose contracts are coming to an end and who are looking to follow the sort of upgrade path. And as I said in my column about it, I felt it would have been disingenuous to call this the iPhone 5, which a lot of critics have said they could have done, and that the response would have been very different if they'd just packaged it differently and spun it differently, as it were. I think that when we look at it, it's still going to be a good device.
One wonders if the iPhone 5 was meant to be launched at this event and it just wasn't ready yet.
Indeed, I thought that about that too. I think that's a definite possibility, and I think there are other complications that we have to bear in mind. For example, if it is it does support 4G or NFC or any of these other sort of talked about developments that are coming. What sort of impact does that have on battery life? And can the batteries keep up? And there are a lot of other sort of technical considerations to which we aren't really privy.
Mm.
I just feel like the problem was the hype, not the product.
Yes.
The problem was that it was built up far too much before the time, and the product will still be good. In fairness, yes, Apple will have that antenna problem with the iPhone 4, and they have certainly had the odd slip up over the years, but generally speaking, Apple don't make bad products. Mm. There's no reason to believe that the 4S will be any different. And if Siri works half as well as they say it will,
that's the voice. This is
the
system.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. The sort of voice interaction. It's suggesting that it can understand different phrasing and that it can dynamically respond and actually make changes to your calendar and set reminders and do all sorts of things. And the voice recognition is nothing new. It's been around in various forms in various phones for ages. The problem is no one cares because no one's ever gotten it right, and it's just proved a really frustrating experience. I can certainly see value in this if Apple have gotten it right, and unfortunately the proof will only be in the testing when we actually get to have a hands-on with the device and see. But if it is as good as they say it's going to be, I see no reason why the 4S won't continue to do really well, just as the previous phones have.
Great, Craig. I think we need to take a quick break there. We'll come back with lots of non-Apple news right after this break.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon. Ignition sequence start. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Okay, gang, cut the gas. You're gonna flip your lids when you see the swell idea the nerds have come up with. Please pick up your tins. Now, you'll see that they're connected by string, and when you talk in that end, Polly, David over here can hear you. Isn't that the cat's pajamas? Don't be a wet rag now, Polly. Say hello.
Hello, Dave.
You see? No sweat.
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX for your business that offers fantastic savings from 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
All right, welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. I'm Duncan McLeod, and I'm here with Craig Wilson. So, Craig, Apple wasn't the only news this week. There's been plenty else going on. Big conference this week, one White Spaces Spectrum, which I attended. I found it absolutely fascinating. I know you've attended the International... forgotten their name now, the IIC conference in Santon, which was a high-level event with industry executives, government leaders, and people from the regulator, etc., attending.
Indeed, and I also had the pleasure of seeing some of the same speakers you did at the big iWeek function a week or two back.
Right, okay. So let's talk a bit about this White Spaces Spectrum issue, which seemed to be a hot button topic this week and seems to be becoming quite a hot topic worldwide at the moment.
It does,
White Spaces Spectrum, just to recap for those who don't know, is what they call the guard bands, the bits of spectrum that sit between TV stations, especially in the analog world, to prevent interference. Now, a lot of very smart people are coming up with some very smart ways to use this spectrum, potentially in ways that don't cause interference with television broadcasts, to leverage it to create wireless broadband networks in relatively low frequency, so making it suited for rolling out services into more outlying areas. And I had the great privilege of listening to people like Steve Song and others at the White Spaces conference this week, where they were talking about using things like the IEEE 802.22 standard, also known as Super Wi-Fi,
right,
to build these sort of networks. Google representatives were there, and they expressed a great deal of interest in piloting a network of this kind to test it and see how it would work in South Africa. And ICASA then lent its support to the idea of a pilot. So I think we could very well see a White Spaces wireless broadband pilot in South Africa very soon.
Indeed, and you said there seems to be a lot of interested parties at that IIC function I was at. There was even a Microsoft representative talking about it, talking about the research Microsoft have done on this sort of topic and on spectrum in general, which is quite sort of interesting considering that they don't really make devices that are subject to it. But he says that Microsoft's been quite involved in this for almost 10 years.
Okay.
And also that part of the sort of White Spaces discussion stems from the fact that those sort of gaps between the stations were put in place in the early days of broadcast because broadcast was so
inefficient.
Inefficient and underdeveloped and under-evolved in those days, and it was a sort of safety measure. But it feels in part like it's been something of a sort of hangover, that we've just clung to this tradition of leaving these
gaps,
but haven't actually needed to. And what it amounts to really is wasted spectrum, and it's becoming an increasingly precious and hotly contested commodity, isn't it?
Absolutely, and what's great about it, I think, is that this could potentially give access to telecommunications operators, internet service providers, to the so-called digital dividend spectrum before we move from analog to digital television. This is spectrum that can potentially be exploited right now.
Absolutely, and that's, I think, the great value of it, because part of the problem with this is, you know, a lot of the pundits are saying that all of this time that we have to wait and we have to wait for the legislation to roll out is all wasted time, really. And,
yes,
and it's all time that we could be getting people connected and speeding up the process of removing that digital sort of divide.
Now, what excites me the most about this White Spaces Spectrum is that regulators around the world are talking about making it available on an unlicensed basis.
Absolutely.
Which means that they're not going to simply say, well, okay, Vodacom or okay, MTN, here's a big chunk of White Spaces Spectrum for you to use exclusively. It will be open to anyone to use. in any way they see fit, provided they meet some basic guidelines in terms of power output and that sort of thing. And the exciting thing is that we've seen what's happened with so-called unlicensed spectrum in the ISM bands, specifically the 2.4 gigahertz band, which is used for Wi-Fi.
Absolutely, Wi-Fi and also is, I think Bluetooth is an unlicensed.
Bluetooth also uses 2.4 gigahertz, yeah.
And as well, yeah.
I think so. Well, a lot of technology is 2.4. Gate remotes.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, all sort of electronic clickers and remote controls. And
What's exciting is the amount of innovation we've seen around Wi-Fi technology. And, wherever you go now, you pick up a Wi-Fi network. I mean, it's a short-range network, but the technology is coming that are going to expand the footprint of Wi-Fi to this new super Wi-Fi technology, potentially 2 kilometers.
Sure.
So it's very exciting. It's a very exciting development. And I suspect, and sitting through this conference, I in fact tweeted it, I think that this could be the most important development in telecommunications since the introduction of mobile.
Indeed.
It's that big. I think that the fact that this is going to be a license exempt frequency spectrum that's what regulators around the world, and we do tend to follow the rest of the world, sure, in terms of regulation. So I don't see why we would do it differently here. But I think the potential, if ICASA gives it the go ahead and the tests prove that the interference doesn't cause any sort of, or there is no interference effectively with the television broadcasters, then I think it's got the potential to unlock the most incredible innovation in the telecommunication space and could actually set the ground for the amazing developments we're going to see in this industry for the next 20 or 30 years.
Indeed, and it has so many repercussions. You know, this sort of goal that we keep talking about universal access, you know, it's things like this that make those sort of goals seem a lot more realistic than they do otherwise.
Indeed.
No, I think it's a really exciting time. And as you said, this is absolutely enormous news, and we really can't overstate the importance of it. Especially for an industry like ours. I mean, the interesting thing is that, of course, a lot of the research into this that's going on elsewhere isn't because of a lack of connectivity. It's because of a lack of capacity, and it's because of people trying to find alternatives and squeeze more out of what's already available. Here it has the potential to actually, really change the lives and bring connectivity to areas that otherwise haven't had it at all.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we must actually try and get Steve Song, who's passionate about white spaces spectrum, onto the show at some point, but let's look at doing that perhaps in the next couple of weeks. He can actually explain in some detail how it works. And
indeed, he's quite a lot more au fait with the ins and outs than we are.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. Definitely. Apologies, Steve, if we've given a very bad description of how white spaces spectrum works. But
you're most welcome to come in and help us correct that.
For sure. Moving along, but on a related topic, I've in fact this morning had a fascinating discussion with Karin Willenberg, who's the Director for Legal and Regulatory Affairs at MNET, the broadcaster, talking about digital TV. And she's got some really interesting and, dare I say, somewhat controversial views about set-top boxes. South Africa has been talking about the set-top box standard and specification for several years now. And we're slowly getting to the point where we're going to go through the process of identifying manufacturers to build these subsidized boxes, which are going to be sold into poorer communities, etc., etc., etc. MWeb is saying, actually, after all these years of talking about set-top boxes...
MNET.
Did I say MWeb? I beg your pardon.
You did.
All related companies. But
MNET.
Almost MNET. MTN, MWeb, they all sound the same. MNET has now come out and said rather controversially that, in fact, we don't need set-top boxes, and in fact, they're a complete waste of money.
Indeed. Well, and also, I think one of the interesting things that I got out of that article was that in many ways it's a sort of stopgap solution, and that it could impair future technological advances in the sort of field, because then you also just have people becoming utterly dependent on those, and you have to sort of shape future developments around it. And I hadn't really thought about that before, I must admit. I sort of thought of the set-top boxes as, well, yes, it's going to be a nuisance to subsidize, they're going to cost too much, you're going to have to roll them out, get them out, it's going to slow down the process, we're never going to meet that deadline, but then at least everything will be okay. And the more I read about it, the more I gather that that's really not the case. It really is just a temporary solution, and that there are better options. For example, these digital converters.
The concern is that if we come up with a fairly complex spec for the set-top boxes, that South Africa is going to be lumped with this technology, and the rest of the world might move on to new technology. But here we are sitting with this outdated technology potentially 5 or 10 years from now, which we can't forklift out easily.
Indeed, and then when we do have to do so, we'll have to subsidize that process again.
Yes, yes. So I think she makes some quite interesting and valid points. She's proposing, or MNET is proposing, that instead of using set-top boxes, we simply use, for the people who need them, just use digital converters, which apparently is a much cheaper technology. Just books into the back of your TV costs anywhere between 200 and 350 rand at the moment, which is about a third to half of what the
set-top boxes are expected to cost. Yeah.
So interesting proposals. I mean, there's a lot to it. I think go and read the piece. There's a lot of sort of angles to it, and I'm sure government is going to come back with some views on this. But MNET has, and other broadcasters and other interested parties, had until the end of September to submit their recommendations to the Department of Communications ahead of its formulation of a final DTT policy document, which should be published, I think, in November or December.
Right.
So they're hoping that these recommendations are going to be taken to heart, but I suspect that we're going to go the set-top box route despite MNET's objections. The other interesting angle to this whole thing, and it's not something that'll be deliberated seriously, I don't think, but the other question that needs to be asked as technology progresses is, do we need to do terrestrial television at all? Shouldn't we just free it all up, get rid of terrestrial television, and use it all for wireless broadband? Put the rest on the internet or via satellite.
Indeed. Indeed. Absolutely. Particularly as, you know, I mean, I've seen the figures thrown around for these set-top boxes, and you're looking at, I mean, they're guessing sort of around 700 Rand. You know, it could be more, it could be slightly less. But at the rate we're going, I mean, 700 Rand is rather a large chunk of a new, small digital television. Mm. And it seems a rather a large expense for something that really doesn't do very much.
Indeed, indeed.
But yeah, if we could free it up, I mean, I would also be quite happy if people, you know, the broadcasters, obviously the broadcasters and advertisers are concerned about losing a large chunk of their audience if they don't find a way to migrate them. But if they could feed it to them as over an internet protocol, I'd certainly be in favour. Yes, I mean, or via satellite.
A satellite. I mean, I don't think our South African internet is well developed enough to do that just yet. But certainly, you could do it over satellite. It is a little more expensive, but then, I don't know, you're freeing up this vast chunk of spectrum all the way from basically zero to not to, well, I don't know where VHF frequency starts, probably around 200 or 300 megahertz, all the way up to 900 megahertz. That's a vast chunk of spectrum which you can do amazing stuff with.
Indeed.
I don't think it's going to happen, though.
No.
In fact, I know it's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, indeed. But it doesn't hurt to dream and to think about the possibilities, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Jobs taught us that.
Yes, indeed. 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 Anything else we need to talk about this week? Super 5 Media, which is the old Telkom Media, while we're on the subject of broadcasting, we broke the story on Tech Central this week that they've tried to get their license renewed, or their temporary license renewed, about 4 or 5 times now.
And this time they've failed.
ICASA has said that they are not going to renew it, but neither are they going to deny it. So what that means in regulatory speak is that they're going to have some public hearings to discuss the issue, and then they're going to make a decision.
And give them a slap on the wrist and go, oi, why aren't you meeting your deadlines to start broadcasting?
It certainly will be some interesting public hearings, I suspect. but we haven't got a date on those yet. But Super 5 Media really has been lurching from one disaster to another. So I'm very sceptical about whether they're ever going to get off the ground.
Well, I mean, of those licenses that were granted, it's only really Top TV that we've...
that's right.
Even that sort of, you know, made any sort of blip on the radar.
Yeah, no, Top TV is up and running. I think they've got a couple hundred thousand subscribers now.
Indeed, so they're actually
not doing it too badly.
The other licenses that have been granted, we've sort of heard nothing about since. Yeah. We hear the odd story like this,
yes,
you know, about Super 5, which is less than encouraging. So.
Indeed, indeed. Great, Craig, I want to talk a bit about the Nokia N9, but I think we're pretty much out of time, so I'll do a bit more playing this weekend and provide a fuller report back in next week's show. Great little device, by the way. It's the first and possibly only ever Mego device that's going to be shipped from Nokia.
Which also, in a sense, will make it something of a curiosity in years to come.
Indeed, indeed. But it's a nice phone. It's a really nice phone. I'm impressed with it. And this is a sort of the shape of things to come with the Nokia Windows Phone 7 devices. I think Nokia could be back in the game in a big way in the next year or two.
Indeed. I think it's the little I've seen of it, it's a really, really exciting sort of portend of things to come. And If it is, then things certainly look brighter for Nokia. And frankly, I hope they do. I'd like to see Nokia become more competitive, because whenever anyone does, it forces everyone else to up their game, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, I always trying to change my technology, Craig. As you know, I'm switching between systems all the time. I run a Mac on my laptop and Windows on my desktop. I've got an Android phone. I've got iPad tablet, so I try and use as many different technologies as possible. So I think my next phone upgrade, I'm currently using an HTC Sensation Android based device, which I love, by the way, but I think my next phone will be a Mango Windows Phone 7 Mango device.
I've been having similar thoughts. Yes, we're a pretty extremely agnostic office here when it comes to devices.
No fanboys in this place.
No, as long as it works and it works well, we're happy with it.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. Alright, let's wrap it up there. Thanks for listening to the show. As always, if you've got any feedback, you can email us at info@techcentral.co.za. From Craig and myself, until next Friday, have a great weekend and cheers.